Next, a debate between the candidates for Washington governor. See where the candidates stand on jobs, immigration, education, and much more. Vote 2012, the debate for governor, is coming up next. Hello, I'm Enrique Cerno. Welcome to Vote 2012, the debate for governor. We are coming to you live from the Yakima Convention Center in downtown Yakima for an unscripted debate between the candidates running for governor of Washington State. Tonight's event is hosted by the Association of Washington State Hispanic Chambers of Commerce. It's produced by KCTS 9, KYVE 47, and the Yakima Herald Republic. Special thanks to AARP of Washington for providing funding for tonight's broadcast, which is being seen and heard on public television and radio stations across the state and in Oregon. I'm joined tonight by Frank Purdy, the editorial page editor for the Yakima Herald Republic, who will be joining me in asking the questions of the candidates. Here quickly are the ground rules. Each candidate will have 1 minute closing and opening statements. Opening statements will be followed by questions. All questions will come from Frank and myself. Each candidate will receive the same question and will have 1 minute to respond with 30-second rebuttals each. In addition, we've given the candidates these challenge cards to use during the debate. They'll get two of these each, which they can use to directly challenge something an opponent says. They'll have 30 seconds to state their challenge, and the challenge candidate will get 30 seconds to respond. There will also be two candidate-to-candidate questions, but Frank and I will step out of the way and let the candidates ask a question of their opponent. Now, without further ado, here are the candidates. I ask the audience to hold its applause until I've introduced both of them. In alphabetical order, Jay Inslee, who prefers the Democratic Party, and Rob McKenna, who prefers the Republican Party. Now, please give them a hearty round of applause. We also are asking the audience tonight to refrain from applauding or making verbal comments during the debate, and I will strictly enforce that rule. Now, we'll begin with the opening statements. The order was determined in advance by a coin toss, and we will start with Mr. McKenna.
Thank you, Enrique. Me gustaría agradecer a mis amigos de las Cámaras de Comercio Hispanos por organizar el debate de esta noche. Ha sido mi privilegio como fiscal general trabajar con líderes de la comunidad latina y líderes de pequeñas empresas. Espero continuar ese trabajo con la comunidad latina como gobernador. Thank you all very, very much for being here. Thanks to the Hispanic Chambers of Commerce from across the state for organizing tonight's event. It was the first debate that I agreed to. It was an easy decision for me to make because I've been working with the Association of Washington Hispanic Chambers of Commerce throughout my 8 years as Attorney General. I look forward to working with them in the future as governor. Tonight's debate is an excellent opportunity to hear the candidates talk in specific detail about the issues of the day. I hope you will hear specifics and the sharp differences that distinguish my opponent and myself. Thanks to all of you, and thank you to the community of Yakima for turning out in such large numbers. Fantastic.
All right, Mr. Inslee.
Good evening and buenas noches. Thank you, Enrique, and the chamber. This is an absolute delight to be in Yakima. This is a special place in my life and my wife, Trudy's. We made our first home here. This is the place I raised hay and raised three boys to a right and honorable manhood. This is the place where I learned to prosecute drunk drivers. This is the place where I first helped our community in education by building a new school, the Sela High School, where we have some great teachers today. And this is the place where I learned how to build a consensus to help our state and nation move forward. Having success in the Yakima River Enhancement Bill so that irrigators can have more water and help agriculture. Helping to make sure our orchardists can sell our apples in Japan. These are lessons I'm going to take to make sure my vision of economic growth can spread across the state, and it's going to be a good thing to have a governor
Thank
from
you.
Eastern Washington
Thank
after
you
70
very much.
Years.
Appreciate it. All right, let's begin with our questions. We do want to note that we had a bit of a technical problem with Rob McKenna's mic. If it isn't working here shortly, we're going to try to fix it as soon as possible.
Yes,
I think that our audio guy was thrown by the Spanish language there. So here we go. We need to fix the microphone right now, so we're going to go ahead and do that so we can bear with us, folks, as we have a little bit of a technical problem, and I will dance, and we'll take care of that quickly. We do appreciate everybody that is here this evening. I believe we have nearly 600 people that have come here from throughout the Yakima Valley area and other parts of the state to be a part of this debate, which we understand is the third of five that the two candidates will have during this season and as we head to the general election in November. And so I think we're getting close to having Mr. McKenna's mic corrected. I hope so. And this is the joys of live television, everyone. So just bear with us as we make this this change in his microphone. And our audio man is Mr. Mark Berkey, who, let's give him a round of applause. Yes, here we go. Thank you. Yes, would you like to count for us in English or Spanish? Take your choice. There we go.
Uno, dos, tres.
Okay, all right. Está trabajando. I hope so. Are we okay? Audio folks, can you let me know? Here we go. We're still working on it, so we will continue here. Do we want to give him the hand mic, folks? Still bear with us. Okay, do we have the hand mic available? Do you have that, please? Let's quickly provide the hand mic to Mr. McKenna so that these little gremlins, they just happen sometimes. So just bear with us as we try to get all of this working. And bear with us, all of you public radio and television stations across the state. Here we go. I believe we're going to get a hand mic for you and have that work. We should be making that work very quickly here. And yes, we know that it's not working. So all of the audience is telling us. Here we go. 1, 2, 1, 2. Can we hand him the hand mic? Right, right. Here we go. We're quickly trying to get all of this worked out. These things happen. We may have to share a mic. We don't know. We pardon all of this. These things happen every once in a while. It's a good thing it's not a presidential debate, folks, but who knows? All right. Oh, I hear a microphone that might be working there someplace. We'll try to get him that microphone quickly. And if not, I may come stand right in the middle of you and you will share my microphone. All right, here we go. All right, a round of applause to our audio guys. Please forgive our little audio problems. We will continue with the debate now. The dancing is done, I hope. Here we go. All right, question is about jobs. Both of you have said that growing jobs is a top priority, but you have very different ideas about how you would accomplish that and what role the state government would play. So pretend now that you are trapped in an elevator or before an audience without a microphone with an undecided voter. Give us your elevator speech to that voter about your plan for job growth and why it makes more sense than your opponents. Let's begin with you, Mr. McKenna.
Thank you very much. One of the reasons we have persistent high unemployment in our country, in our state today, in fact, the seventh highest overall unemployment rate in America, according to the federal government, is that we make it too expensive for small businesses especially to employ people in this state. We're consistently listed as one of the 10 most expensive states in America in which to do business. I've learned this from talking to hundreds and hundreds of small business owners across the state in the course of this campaign and during my time as Attorney General. So it makes sense to lower those costs through a series of reforms, not to make us the cheapest state in America, but so that we're no longer one of the most expensive. Reforms like unemployment insurance reform, workers' comp reform, regulatory reform, and reforming the business and occupation tax. It's the businesses of the state, the small companies especially, that will bring us back from high unemployment. We need to make it easier for them, more affordable for them, to grow their companies and hire more people. That's the only way, ultimately, we can directly help them reduce the rate of unemployment in
our
state.
And Mr. Inslee.
We need a plan that is specifically focused and tailored to what we do so well in the state of Washington. And we have a secret sauce in this state, and that is the power of innovation. We create, we invent, we build. We led an industrial revolution in commercial aerospace. We led the world in dominant software, and now we need and we have a 75-point plan on how we can help small businesses, medium businesses, and large businesses to capture the opportunities inherent in an innovative, technologically savvy industrial growth. And that is the kind of plan that I have put forth. And it is built on private sector entrepreneurship, giving them better access to research from the University of Washington and Washington State University, giving them an R&D tax credit so that they can help generate capital for a new business, helping small businesses get additional work with the Department of Defense. These are tailor-made systems, and I have put forth a very tailored proposal.
Thank you. We have a rebuttal now from Mr. McKenna, 30 seconds.
Well, I've read Congressman Inslee's plan, and there's nothing in it about any of the issues I'm hearing about from small businesses. There's nothing about regulatory reform, unemployment insurance reform, workers' comp, or B&O tax reform. There is a plan, a paragraph that talks about creating a new state agency, the Office of Economic Competitiveness and Development, and hiring more state employees. None of the business owners and leaders I've talked to say that what they need is another state agency and more state employees to tell them what to do. So we have, as you said, very different approaches.
Right. Thank you. We have a 30-second rebuttal from you, Mr. Inslee.
I don't think Rob read my plan real carefully, I don't think, as far as I can tell, because our plan, in fact, does have a proposal to embrace the lean management systems that Boeing has used, that Virginia Mason has used, so that we can have more timely decision-making in our permitting situation and applications for business. And you know what the businesses are telling me? They want a government that will be a partner, and so we're going to break up a dysfunctional agency, not hire more people, but put it in a place that's actually going to help businesses grow. That's what we should do.
All right, Frank.
Yes, I have a question about farm labor. Central Washington is the country's 12th largest farming region. It leads the nation in growing apples, hops, mint, and many other products. Agriculture is a multi-billion dollar industry, but yet again this year we are facing a farm labor shortage. Last year, asparagus went uncut. This year, apple growers are worried about the harvest. What is the state's role in alleviating this problem? And I'll start with Mr. Inslee.
The state's role is to have a governor who both understands the depth and the importance of agriculture to the state of Washington. And as a fellow who's bucked hay and helped orchardists, I understand that. And that's why I'm going to help improve the labor situation for agriculture. But we also need a person who will understand if we're going to have comprehensive immigration reform, we have to have leaders who won't use immigration as a wedge issue, but in fact will try to develop a bipartisan consensus about how to have comprehensive immigration reform. Now, the sad fact is that one of the parties has decided to use immigration and the fear of immigration as a wedge issue rather than seeking a comprehensive solution. I will be a governor who will make sure that we move forward to a situation that helps agriculture, helps students, and helps the DREAM Act so that our students can actually move forward economically. That is a plan to unite us. We should be united on this rather than divided politically.
Thank you.
Well, if Congressman Inslee were sincere about wanting comprehensive immigration reform, he should have stayed in Congress instead of quitting Congress halfway through his term, a Congress which did not even bring up comprehensive immigration reform for a vote during President Obama's administration. We do need comprehensive immigration reform, but the question was about farm labor in particular. And there what we need is meaningful reform of the H-2A process to make it easier for our employers to bring workers in to work hard to earn good money and to go home and enjoy the fruits of their labor, then come back and work again if they choose. We need a reformed guest worker program that will provide workers not only in agriculture, but also in high tech. Microsoft opened its latest software development center in British Columbia because they couldn't get enough H-1B visas to bring in high-tech workers to help them write code. So this is a problem for much of our economy. We need comprehensive immigration reform and also reform of these specific worker programs.
Rebuttal.
It is a bit surprising to be there's a little irony to be chastised by a Republican on this subject, and I'll tell you why. We Democrats have been fighting for a comprehensive approach, including guest worker provisions, to help agriculture for years. And unfortunately, the Republican Party locked up in Washington, D.C., and refuse to help us move forward with immigration reform. We need this for high tech. We need it for agriculture. I will be a governor who will use my voice, and governors are not voiceless in this matter.
Just to be clear about it, I haven't been in Congress for the last 15 years, like Congressman Inslee. And the fact is, they didn't even bring reform up for a vote. The DREAM Act came up, which we'll talk about later, but not comprehensive immigration reform. They didn't even bring it up for a vote. To make this a partisan issue right out of the gates is to deflect blame and deflect responsibility from the very people who failed to lead on this issue, leadership that we've sorely needed and certainly that our employers and their workers have needed for the last many years.
Thank you very much. I do want to remind the audience that no applause or verbal comments during the debate, please. Thank you very much. The reality is our agricultural success is largely dependent on migrant laborers, the majority of whom are, as one group calls it, document challenged. Some critics and counties in our state use a federal database called E-Verify to check a person's immigration status before hiring them, and there's talk that Congress might make it mandatory. Where do you stand on the use of that program or similar ideas, such as requiring someone to show proof of residency before getting a driver's license in Washington State? Mr. McKenna first.
Well, I've talked to many employers and people who work for those employers, people in the community, activists who advocate on behalf of laborers, and they all agree E-Verify is seriously flawed. And neither the employers nor the workers think this is a sensible system to implement. Remember, we have requirements now, the requirements of the I-9 document, for example, that employers and employees are required to fill out. In terms of driver's licenses, there are two issues here. One is giving someone a permit to operate an automobile. The other is giving them a driver's license, which acts as the primary form, the primary means of identification in our country today. Not just in our state, in our country. We're one of only two states in America that does not require proof of legal residence to obtain that key identity document. Therefore, I believe we should require proof of legal residence to obtain that identity document. And if someone cannot provide proof of that, but can provide other proof that they at least reside in our state, they should be given a permit so they can continue to drive and not be denied the ability to drive in our state.
Thank you very much, Mr. Inslee.
Yeah, I don't think an answer to our challenges is this E-Verify system. Again, we need to get more Republicans who will vote so we can pass comprehensive immigration reform and bring it up for a vote. That's the answer to our immigration needs. Now, on driver's licenses, I've met some really great young people the last couple days here in Yakima. I'm just talking from students at Washington. And I just don't think it makes sense for a student from Davis High School who might be valedictorian, who wants to get an MBA from the UW, to be told that they can't drive to the UW after we've educated these young folks. So I don't think that we should make it impossible for them to drive. But I do believe we should continue our efforts to make sure that you are a resident in the state of Washington, because we have been making progress on that to make sure it's not used for fraudulent purposes. And we actually have made good progress on that. We've got to continue down that route.
All right, thank you very much. Rebuttal, Mr. McKenna.
Well, we're in agreement that someone should not be denied the opportunity to drive in the scenario that Congressman Inslee has mentioned, for example. But remember, this is also, you know, putting aside the issue of a permit for driving, which we agree on, the idea that you can obtain a driver's license, which is the key identity document in our country today, you use it to go through security, you use it to prove who you are around the country, the idea that you should be able to obtain without proving you're a legal resident of the country is seriously mistaken, and we strongly disagree on that.
All right. Mr. Inslee?
Well, no, I believe we've got to have more rigorous assessments to make sure you are who you say you are when you apply for whatever you're going to call this document. That is why I believe we need to tighten up our system to make sure that only actual residents of the state of Washington receive the driver's license. And if we do that, then in fact we will be able to make sure you are who you are. The secret of this is to make sure that we've got the right person, and that way we can make sure our ID system is successful.
All right, we have a challenge from Mr. McKenna.
Congressman Inslee is trying to muddle the distinction between us. Be very clear. He says you have to show that you reside in the state. I'm saying that to obtain the number one identity document any of us possesses, you have to prove you're here legally, because that means you're proving who you are. You're proving what your identity is. There is a strong disagreement here. Most people in our state believe that to obtain the driver's license that you use to prove who you are, you should have to prove you are here as a legal resident of this nation and of this state.
Thank you very much. Now you have 30 seconds to respond.
Well, again, I think the key here is, and we should know, we have made real progress on this because we have tightened the rules that we now have to show who you are by making sure you are a resident. These were too loose, frankly, and now they're being tightened. This should be the focus. Look, even if you can say you're here and you produce some document, if you've got the wrong person, we got a problem. So we've got to make sure that we do two things. Make sure the person is who they say they are, number one, and make sure that we don't stop students from driving to the UW.
Thank you. And we have now the first candidate-to-candidate question, and first up is Mr. Ensley to ask his question.
Thank you. Rob, we have a beautiful environment in the state of Washington. We've got good standards, and I think those should be maintained, but I've heard your candidate, Mitt Romney, and you talk about, you've said you would reduce standards where our standards were better, cleaner than federal standards. I disagree with that. Could you tell us what standards you think should be removed or lessened of our environmental standards to go down to federal standards?
I love the way Congressman Inslee tries to nationalize the race. Notice the clever reference to Mitt Romney, for example.
Please pick up your mic.
It's very transparent. And kind of funny, actually. The fact of the matter is that when we're talking about federal standards and state standards, we should be looking for harmony between those standards. So if the federal standard is adequate, why would we automatically try to make the state standard tougher? Because that means that people who have to comply with that standard have to comply with up to three different standards. They have to comply with the local government standard, with the state standard, and with the federal standard. So an example would be of, for example, shoreline regulation. You have to go through the local permitting requirement under the Critical Areas Ordinance, the state requirements under the Shoreline Management Act, and then the federal requirements imposed by the Army Corps of Engineers. What makes sense is to harmonize those requirements as much as possible. Sometimes we'll want to have a higher standard than the federal government, but the idea that we should automatically have a higher standard just doesn't make sense. It's just a knee-jerk response that imposes a lot of needless costs that aren't justified by the
Thank you.
Benefits.
You get 30 seconds to respond, Ms. Ransley.
Well, what I heard is this word harmonize means we're going to reduce our standards in the state of Washington. Look, we are not Louisiana. That's just not who we are as a state. We've got the most precious environment in the history of the solar system. And to protect it, we've got to make our own decisions about our environmental standards. We can't allow Washington, D.C., Louisiana, or anyone else. And I don't believe we should reduce our standards. Yes, we should have a better permitting system that helps businesses get those permits faster. But I don't believe going backwards
Thank
is
you.
A direction for this state environmental.
Thank you very much. And we have another rebuttal.
Well, you notice the congressman doesn't give any examples of where he thinks the state standard must be higher than the federal standard. After asking me for specifics, he fails to provide any of his own. That's fairly typical of the rhetoric you hear from the congressman. The fact of the matter is that we should not have a rule where we automatically adopt a higher standard than the federal government just so we can say it's higher. Let's set our standards based on what we need, and let's set the goal of having federal and state and local standards be as harmonious as possible to reduce the burdens we place on the people who are trying to comply
Thank
with
you.
Those standards.
All right. Now, Mr. McKenna, you get a chance to ask your question of Mr. Ensley.
Thank you, Enrique. Congressman, you actually have a record of facing the type of budget situation which one of us will face as governor next year. This happened when you were back when you were a legislator in 1992. The state faced a budget shortfall, and there were two paths before you: reduce state spending or increase taxes. You not only chose the route of raising taxes, you also chose to cut parts of the budget affecting students, seniors, and some of the state's most vulnerable citizens through those budget cuts, so that the state could give a pay raise to some of your biggest campaign donors, state employee unions. Why would voters trust you again in this situation, knowing that tax increases and pay raises for your donors were your solution the last time you were in state government?
Well, I'm a little bit surprised by that question by a person who has proposed tax increases for hundreds of thousands of people in their property taxes already, before he even is governor. But my solution to this problem we are in is multiple, and I am not proposing tax increases. What I'm proposing is that we focus on the diagnosis of the problem we have today, which is jobs. And I'm focused like a laser beam on jobs, so we can get people back to work. When we do this, we will increase revenues for education. We will increase revenues for the state. And I'm focused on reducing our medical inflation rate so that we can stop taking money out of our schools and colleges and increasing tuition on our kids and putting it into the medical inflation rate. This is a solution to our problem. This is the direction we should go. And look, people have to make hard choices. There's got to be sacrifices. State employees have had some cuts. They're down 9%, even though the population is growing. But we've got to do more with less.
All right, you get a rebuttal.
Notice the congressman's approach. Make a false accusation, dodge the question. You notice he didn't answer or address his record as a state legislator, cutting budgets for kids, for the elderly, while raising taxes. And then promising, saying he's not proposing taxes. Notice the careful use of the present tense. Just like people who have come before him, when they're running, they're not proposing tax increases. When they get there, the legislature passes them and they sign them into law. That's the pattern we've seen again and again and again in Olympia that Congressman Inslee evidently plans to maintain.
Thank you. All right, you get 30 seconds.
Well, in the present tense tonight, Rob is proposing to raise property taxes on hundreds of thousands of homeowners and small businesses across the state of Washington. You don't have to worry. He's already proposed this. I believe in a different path. I do not believe tax increases are the right path for the state of Washington. I believe the path is to help small businesses to make sure that they can grow jobs and we can get our economy back on track. And that is the route back to fiscal health for the state of Washington.
Correct.
Mr. Inslee, I have a question here. Gang activity and gang violence are at alarming and deadly levels in central Washington. New laws targeting gangs have languished in the legislature over concerns about racial profiling and violating civil rights. What approaches will you offer to end this cycle of violence? Are you in favor of, say, laws to make it illegal for gang members to congregate or wear certain clothes?
Yes, I think that there are some things we need to do in that direction, but I think we need to have a multi-prong approach. And I care deeply about this. First thing I ever did as a legislator is help get the Yakima County Jail built, and now we have half the beds can't be operated in the juvenile detention center. So I would propose three things. Number one, we got to get law enforcement to have the resources to do their jobs. Look, half the juvenile detention beds you can't operate here because there's no operating funds. We got to give them the tools to do the job. Second, we've got to have a preventative system to make sure that we get to these potentially dangerous young people to get them out of gangs and into school. And I got to tell you, when I meet a young man who said he got reeled back into school in Pasco High School out of a gang, that's inspired. And third, I do believe we need to do some things, particularly around the area of nuisances that would have particular locations that might be problematic. And I think that's got to be part of the multi-pronged approach.
Go ahead.
Frank, thank you. You know, I've been to Yakima dozens and dozens of times as Attorney General to work specifically on the epidemic of street gang violence. Just the other day, four young men who were in a gang were sentenced to life sentences in prison for shooting up a house in Outlook. A few weeks ago, a 58-year-old woman was shot in her bed in a drive-by shooting. You know, to address this issue, we have to convince the legislature this is a real problem, because believe me, most of them don't think it is. They don't hear gunfire at night where they live. They don't hear the gunfire I heard when I went out with the Yakima Police Department to see the situation for myself. The answer is to go after the leaders of the gangs aggressively, to give alternatives to the kids so that they don't have to choose the gang lifestyle or can't be sucked into it, to do that by funding after-school programs and by expanding the share of the state budget which goes into education and make those resources available, including making the schools available after hours.
Yeah, I want to be a governor that we got a huge gang problem in Yakima, but I do want to say it's important for us to make sure people have a positive view about this community, too. And there are some good things going on here. Trevor Green, principal of the year at Toppenish High School, he's raised his graduation rate to 90%. And you can be guaranteed there's a lot of his students that got out of gangs and into high school. And I want to be a governor that will help this community thrive and grow in that regard, and I'm looking forward to it.
All right, thank you.
Yes,
It's a little bit hard to take the congressman seriously when he talks about wanting to help kids in this way. When you look at his record as a state legislator, he voted to cut dropout prevention programs, voted to cut funding for early learning, voted to cut the very programs that we're talking about today. And the people who are supporting him, his biggest donors in this campaign, have been part of the process of reducing the share of the state budget going to education from over 50% to a low of 38% a few years ago. So it isn't credible to hear these promises.
All right. Thank you both, gentlemen. We do want to remind everyone that you're watching a governor's debate on public television and radio stations throughout the state of Washington and also into Oregon. And let's continue now with the questioning. Let's talk marijuana. On November 6th, voters in Washington will be asked to approve or reject Initiative 502, which would legalize recreational marijuana use. Now, critics say the proposed law is in direct contradiction with federal statutes. Let's assume it is November 7th and the initiative has passed. As governor, what do you do now? Mr. McKenna.
The governor is the chief executive officer and has that title because the governor's role is to execute the laws of this state. So the governor's role will be to oversee its implementation. The problem will be that recreational use of marijuana will continue to be a federal crime, and that's why this initiative ought to be defeated. As a federal crime, federal prosecutors will come in, they will prosecute. They may also jeopardize the availability of medical marijuana, something they have chosen not to do simply at their own discretion. But this presidential administration and its Department of Justice have made it very clear that they will prosecute if marijuana is legalized under state law and people attempt to use it recreationally under state law. And I don't think that's a position that we want to put ourselves in. If marijuana is to be legalized, there needs to be action in Congress. And that hasn't occurred, of course.
All right. Mr. Enzo.
Well, I'm not supporting this initiative, but if the initiative passes, I think it's important to fulfill that mandate. I have been a supporter of medical marijuana. I have been working to try to change both the administration's policy and our statute in that regard. And what I would do is seek to fulfill the voters' direction to try to help the administration continue the evolution towards a system that would be compliant and consistent with our state's decision in that regard. And I think that's important for folks who are using medical marijuana. I sat next to a Boeing engineer on a plane a while back talking to his wife's brain cancer, and I think that our effort to find some working agreement with the federal government about medical marijuana could be part and parcel of this consensus. So I would move in that direction.
All right. Mr. McKenna, you get a rebuttal.
Well, again, Congressman Inslee and I both agree. This is not a well-thought-out law. It should be defeated. Even some advocates of marijuana legalization oppose it and are advocating for its defeat. And I hope that's the result on Election Day.
All right.
I will say this, regardless of the outcome of the initiative, you know, when you think about the gang problem we hear in Yakima that has led to homicides and horrific violence, I do think we have to have an approach that will reorient law enforcement resources towards these more serious crimes away from the recreational use of marijuana. I think that's a sensible policy. We can continue to try to encourage our children to not look at that as a healthy thing, but I think that's a sensible policy, and I would do that as governor.
Let me throw in one follow-up here quickly, and I'll give you 15 seconds to respond to this. But if it does pass, will you try to get the legislature to suspend it, to suspend the law? Okay. Sorry about that.
I think the legislature is going to have to consider all of its options if it is passed, because it's going to put Washington State voters in harm's way, or Washington State residents in harm's way, by legalizing a product which will still be illegal under federal law. There will be people who will be under the mistaken impression that they're immune from prosecution.
Thank you. Go ahead.
No, I would not do that. Look, there's an evolution taking place on medical marijuana, for instance. It's technically illegal today with the federal law, but we've reached some close to a rapprochement with the administration. I would continue to try to move that evolution forward to reach a consensus with the administration.
All right. Come on.
Hey, we'll take the giant step from medical marijuana to health care. One facet of the Affordable Care Act gives states the option of expanding Medicaid to provide health insurance to the thousands of people in each state who are uninsured. The federal government is going to pay the full cost of those newly eligible for the first 3 years, but over time, the states will have to pay more. Do you support the expansion of Medicaid, and what is your plan to make sure that every Washingtonian has adequate health care, including the estimated 30,000 people in the Yakima Valley who presently are uninsured? We'll start with Mr. Inslee.
Well, I will start and say right up front, I believe we need to have Washingtonians have health insurance, and that's important to all of us, even those who have health insurance. And I'll tell you why. You know what happens today? We have 30,000 people without insurance. When they get a heart attack, they go to Memorial Hospital, where my kids were all born, and they run up a $300,000 bill, and they don't pay. The hospital then has to get somebody to pay the bill, right? So what do? They foist it off onto our insurance companies, charge our insurance company, they charge us. We all pay about $1,000 a year for every family to pay what I call a hidden tax because of those uninsured folks. Now, this is what I think is close to a no-brainer. During the first term, the next term, the federal government will pay 100% of the cost of those folks, so that takes that burden off of our shoulders, off of those who go to hospitals, off of those who have premiums in insurance in the Yakima Valley. That is a good economic decision.
Actually, it's not nearly that simple. Treating it like free money is a mistake. It isn't free. First of all, Frank, you're right that the federal government will temporarily cover 100% of the cost of the newly eligible enrollees in Medicaid. But the forecasts are that 77 to 78,000 people who are not currently on Medicaid but are eligible for it will also enroll, something called the welcome mat effect. And we will have to pay our 50% share of that cost. There may be some offsets, there may be some help from the federal government, but we're looking at a pretty stiff bill for those people already eligible who will come on along with the newly eligible people. How are we going to pay for that? Medicaid is a good basic safety net, but it is not insurance, it's welfare. The better plan is to get as many people as possible to stay under private coverage, as nearly 80% of the people today who are eligible for Medicaid and are not on it have. Nearly 80% currently eligible who are not on Medicaid already have private insurance. Let's keep as many of them on private insurance as we can.
Well, I fundamentally disagree with my opponent's position that it's okay for our state to leave 30,000 people to clog our emergency rooms and have us pay for that. We've got to have a solution. The status quo is bankrupting small businesses because of those premiums. Now, here's something also we've got to understand. This is just a real kind of nuts and bolts issue. It's not like if we don't do this, we get to take a break on all of our taxes we pay on April 15th. We're paying that taxes one way or another. And if we don't have this money come back to Yakima Valley Memorial, it's going to go to Florida and California. That's not the right way to spend it.
It's strange to hear one's debate opponent claim you said the opposite of what you all just heard me say. What I said was we're going to keep Medicaid as the basic safety net, but the goal is not to have one out of three Washingtonians on Medicaid, which will be eligible to be on Medicaid. The goal is to keep as many of them on private insurance as possible, which is what they prefer. That's why they don't come on to Medicaid when they have the opportunity to do so. They keep their private coverage. That's where we ought to be going, where we ought to be going forward. This is not free. You pay for it as a federal taxpayer, you pay for it as a state taxpayer.
Thank you. We have a challenge from Mr. Inslee. Go ahead.
Remember when Mitt Romney talked about the 47% that just weren't sort of part of our family in a sense? And now my opponent says that this one out of three somehow should not have insurance. I just fundamentally disagree with that. Does not provide a way to provide that insurance. It's going to be about one out of five people, and that's what the estimates are. And you can go to jinslee.com and take a look at the documents on that. And it's going to do it with 100% of federal dollars when we extend that coverage to folks. That's not just a fiscal
Thank
good
you.
Decision. It's a humane
Thank
one.
You. Okay, Mr. McKenna.
It's so much easier to debate someone if you just make up what their answer is and then pretend to debate that than simply address what I actually said, which you all heard. What I said was Medicaid's going to be there. The eligibility threshold has already been raised to 138% of the federal poverty level. But Mr. Inslee's ideal of one in three people being on Medicaid is not where we want to be. We already know that hundreds of thousands of Washingtonians who could be on Medicaid choose not to be because they prefer to remain with their private insurance. And that's where we ought to be going forward as well.
All right, thank you very much. You have another challenge, Mr.
I think this is an important point. Yes, we have Medicaid, but the question is whether it will be expanded to allow working people in our state to get access to it. And the question is, are we going to expand that so we can take advantage of this 100% funding from the federal government? That is the question. And I have not heard my opponent says he's going to accept that expansion. Now, if he says that, that's great. It would show great progress than when he lost the lawsuit to try to remove every single
one
of these rights.
All right.
Again, you can tell Congressman Inslee spent 15 years in Congress. He wants you to think this is free money. Hey, take the federal money. It's 100% covered. Why would we want that? It's a good deal. But as Frank's question pointed out, it's 100% temporarily, then it goes down. And meanwhile, the people who come onto Medicaid who are already eligible, who are welcomed in, we're still having to pay 50% of the cost to them, as we do for currently eligible people today. Don't be fooled by the Washington, D.C. mentality, which has led us to trillion-dollar deficits and endless entitlement spending.
Thank you. Just heads up, I believe you used two of your challenges already, Mr. Inslee. And so, yes, I know, you have one more. I know. Okay, moving on. Let's talk taxes. Initiative 1185 would require a two-thirds legislative vote or a vote of the people to increase taxes. There's some questions about whether a measure like that is constitutional. As you know, that's being debated or has been in the state Supreme Court. But when the current governor faced a similar bill, Initiative 960, she didn't have to wait for the courts to decide. She and the legislature simply suspended it. If 1185 passes, what will you do? And assuming the courts don't find it unconstitutional, will you live by it or will you try to suspend it? And if so, explain why. And let's start with Mr. McKenna.
Well, the voters are going to have their fifth opportunity to approve a law, which they clearly want. It's on the ballot this November. They've approved it four times before by wide margins. And the legislature has chosen to ignore it, typically by waiting until 2 years go by when they can suspend it or undo it by simple majority vote. So four times, the folks supporting Jay Inslee for governor have gone out and undone or suspended a law that the voters have adopted. And now for a fifth time, they're going to have to do it again. Now, why is that? Why would Congressman Inslee and his allies in Olympia want to make it easier to raise taxes? Could it be because they plan to raise taxes? Probably so. Because Governor Gregoire and Congressman Inslee's allies in the legislature have said repeatedly in the last several months, we need more tax increases. That's obviously why they plan to undo this initiative if they get the chance to do so, something I will block, because I respect the voters' will.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Inslee.
Under my plan, it should not be necessary to address that issue, because on my plan, we're not going to request additional taxes. We're going to grow jobs in our state with an innovative economy that can help small businesses put people back to work. And when people go back to work, they're going to pay more sales taxes, there'll be more revenue for schools. That's the fundamental problem, and that's why I have focused on having this 75-point plan to get jobs growth going around in these innovative new economies. Again, you can check that out at jayinslee.com. That is why my plan, why I'm glad that my opponent's lawsuit failed, so that we can move forward with these reform provisions and start getting preventative medicine so we can stop having high inflation and put that money back into schools. Now, on the two-thirds requirement, though, in general, philosophically, I'm old-fashioned. I think everybody should get one vote. And if you do the math, you go to a two-thirds requirement, one guy gets one vote, the other guy gets 1.5 votes. I'm kind of old-fashioned. I think people all ought to get one vote.
All right.
I didn't hear him answer the question, did you? Did he answer the question whether he would uphold it or go along with the legislature's attempts to suspend it? Congressman Inslee did say that he's, quote, not going to request taxes to be increased. Oh, that's true. He doesn't have to request it. The legislature will pass the tax increases if they get the chance to do so, and will suspend the new two-thirds requirement again if they need to and send them to his desk, just like they've done with all the other governors. So watch the rhetoric and the careful use of language. No, he's not going to request it. He knows they're coming
Thank
to
you.
Him anyway.
All right, Mr. Inslee. You have 30 seconds.
If you're really interested in what's going on here, go to propertyswaptax.com and see the record where my opponent, in fact, is proposing a tax increase today. I've just said I'm not going to try this two-thirds because I don't think it'll be necessary. I've got a plan to get people back to work, to save money in health care, to embrace lean management systems, and use those savings, in fact, to fund education.
Thank you. Next question.
While we're talking money, let's talk money for education. The state Supreme Court's recent McCleary ruling found that the state is not living up to its paramount constitutional duty, which is to fund basic education. The ruling estimates the state will need at least $1 billion in additional funding for education in the next two-year budget. Both of you say that we can find the money without raising taxes. The current governor says you're both wrong. Tell us why she is wrong, and where will you get the money? Mr. Inslee.
Well, I've talked about this plan I have for job creation. These are 75 ideas we have not implemented in the state of Washington. You know, the University of Utah gets about five times more businesses out of $100 of research at their institution than we do. If we increase that to half what Utah is doing, we could create about $3 billion of economic activity in the state of Washington. Now, that's a common sense approach, and we are not doing this. There's been some little baby steps, but we've got to do these kind of common sense things. And the reason I believe we can do this is that if we can embrace lean management systems, the same system that allow Boeing to increase their 737 production by 30 or 40%, we need to embrace that cultural change throughout state government. There is no reason that the systems of quality improvement that have been so successful in private enterprise in our state are not used in state government. And when I'm governor, we're going to use those systems.
Thank you.
Wow. I've heard that so many times, and I keep waiting for Congressman Inslee to tell us how much he's going to be able to free up through lean management, something he's never actually used, of course, even though he's run an office in Congress. He talks about job growth, but of course job growth is already assumed in the revenue forecasts that are on the table. And yet his allies, including Governor Gregoire, insist on tax increases even after they project an $11 billion increase in state tax revenues over the next 8 years. That's where we're going to get the money, as well as from the existing budget. We're going to prioritize education. But remember, it's about two things. It's not just about adequacy, it's about uniformity. What Congressman Inslee keeps sort of mentioning without actually explaining to you, because it sounds really nasty if he doesn't explain it, is the property tax swap. What that is not my proposal. It's what the Supreme Court is effectively requiring after all these years of the people supporting Jay Inslee raising the share of education that has to come from local levies.
Rebuttal.
Well, in fact, this property tax swap that my opponent has embraced does two things. It increases property taxes on hundreds of thousands of Washington homeowners and small businesses, and it doesn't raise any net money for schools. Now, that may be something for Olympia politicians to help them on paper, but it does not help students in school. This is a gimmick that doesn't help us move forward. That's why I think we need to move forward by health care reform, lean management, and getting people back to work.
You know, you'd think that someone running for governor who knew the McCleary question was going to be coming in a debate would actually take the time to read McCleary, as Congressman Inslee has apparently not chosen to do. McCleary says we're over-relying on local property tax levies. 28% of school funding on average comes from your local property taxes. 30 years ago, it was 10%. It's unconstitutional. And so Democrats and Republicans in the state legislature have said, if we've got to reduce local levies, what do we replace that money with? And what they've said is the state common school levy. This is what I've observed is happening. It's
Thank
not
you.
My proposal.
Thank
it's
you.
What they're saying is going to happen.
Thank you. I have here the final question of the night. Coal trains. Plans to transport millions of tons of coal through Washington for shipment to China hold the promise of much-needed jobs for the region. But critics worry about the environmental impacts, such as pollution from coal dust, train derailments, or barge accidents that might happen on the Columbia River. Environmental groups, elected officials, Native American tribes, including the Yakima Nation, are opposing the plans. Where would you as governor stand, and what action will or won't you take related to the proposed new coal export terminals here in the Northwest? We'll start with you, Mr. McKenna.
Well, these terminals are very large. and they could have significant environmental impacts, possibly health impacts. And so they're going to have to go through a lengthy environmental review process that assesses not only the impacts of the terminal operations, but the impacts of the trains that carry the coal to reach those terminals. In making those evaluations, they're going to have to assess whether or not the trains are coming anyway. In other words, will the trains come whether we build the terminals or not? There is a lot of speculation that if the terminals aren't located in our state, they'll simply haul the coal up to British Columbia. So we'll still get the train traffic, we'll get the coal, but we won't get the jobs at the terminals. That's why organized labor and business in communities like Longview and Whatcom County are saying, yeah, let's take a serious look at having those jobs and having these terminals here. But they're not going to be approved unless they can meet the rigorous standards established under law. And that means a cumulative impacts analysis to look at what not just how one terminal affects us, but how multiple terminals would.
All right. Mr. Hanson.
Look, I look at this from a jobs perspective. That's what I'm focusing on as running for governor. There are some positive jobs in constructing these ports and operating them, but there are some negative downsides for jobs as well. I was talking to a city councilman from Washougal a month or so ago, and he was very concerned about the impact of small businesses in his town of having these almost 2-mile-long trains going through their town 18 to 40 times a day. That is a real negative on jobs itself. So we have to have a cumulative impact statement to look at all of these impacts throughout the state of Washington of these very, very significant proposals. But we should not wait there. We should embrace the innovative spirit of Washington to build a clean energy industrial base in the state so we can sell new systems that aren't fossil fuel based. Solar energy, wind energy, energy efficiency. Silicon Energy in Marysville, the most durable solar cell made in the world today, is made in Marysville, Washington. We've got to make sure we do that.
Thank you. We have a short amount of time, so we want to make sure we give just quickly on these rebuttals, so go ahead.
Well, look, you know, there are going to be impacts from trains. The question is, are they trains stopping in our state to unload not only coal but wheat and other commodities, or are they just going to roll all the way through our state to British Columbia or other destinations? So let's go through the review, let's carefully weigh the costs and benefits, and at the end of that process, I think we'll have a pretty clear idea if these are projects that we want or not.
All right. We have one more rebuttal. Mr. Inslee, rebuttal. 30 seconds. 15 seconds, actually.
Let me just emphasize what I last talked about. We're on the cusp of a technological revolution in the world, and we know the world's going to look for huge amounts of clean energy. This is right in our wheelhouse. This is what we do so well in Washington. This clean energy future has Washington written all over it.
Thank you very much. All right. So it's time for our closing statements. The order was determined in advance, and we begin now with Mr. McKenna.
Thank you very much, Enrique. And again, thank you to the Association of Washington Hispanic Chambers of Commerce. Great job, Chris, and everybody. Terrific event. And thanks to the Yakima Herald and to KCTS. Look, you have a clear choice in this election. You can choose the path of the status quo, which Mr. Rinsley represents, and not only that, the people who support it, who are supporting him, represent. So if you're happy with having one of the highest unemployment rates in America, which is where we find ourselves now, if you're happy with being one of the 10 most expensive states in which to run a small business and employ people, if you think it's satisfactory to be under a court order to adequately and uniformly fund our schools, if you think a growing achievement gap is a good thing and that having higher education tuition priced out of side is acceptable, if you believe that endless deficits and endless demands for tax increases are where you want to be, then by all means, you have your candidate. But if you believe it's time for a new direction in Washington, one that's fiscally sustainable, that funds our schools first, not as an afterthought, that restores the share of the budget, then I ask for your vote. Thank you.
I'm honored to join you tonight. Trudy couldn't join you. She's with the First Lady in Seattle. And what I would ask for your vote on is to help us make sure that we do what we have always done in our state, and that is to move forward. We move forward on a women's right of choice. We're not going to go backwards. We move forward on respecting marriage equality in our state, and I don't believe we should go backwards. We've moved forward on environmental protection. We should not go backwards. We have now given a chance to move forward on health care reform so that we can end this hidden tax on all of us and have a system where we have people who have insurance, and we can move to preventative care. We can move forward on educational reform, and we can do some of the things that have been so successful here in the Yakima Valley to now end this scandalous situation where 1 out of 5 of our kids are not graduating. We know we can do better. And I've got a plan to do that. I'd ask you to check it out at jayinslee.com. I would ask for the honor of your vote. Thanks for a chance to be with you. Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much, gentlemen, very much for what was the longest few minutes of my life earlier tonight. But I really appreciate the fact that you were so patient. And thank you to the audience. That's all the time that we have. I want to thank the Association of Washington State Hispanic Chambers of Commerce for hosting tonight's event. Thanks also to Frank Purdy, the Yakima Herald Republic, for helping me out here. KCTS 9, KYVE 47 produced the show. Thanks to AARP for funding tonight's broadcast. Thank you to the Yakima Chamber of Commerce. And of course, thanks to the candidates and everyone that joined us here tonight in Yakima. It was great being here. Thank you for turning out, and good luck in November. Good night.